Hi, welcome to Info Dumpies. My name's Brianne. I'm autistic, I have ADHD, and I'm graded at like a 6. It would be higher, but someone cut out the Marvel stamp collection thing in the back, and I'm worth way less now.
Hi, my name is Violet. My pronouns are she, her. I have ADHD, and the only slab I know about is the one that dang Eustace needs to return to the Pharaoh.
Return the slab.
Return the slab.
And our guest today is Carl Brooks. Huh. Carl is autistic. He has ADHD. His pronouns are he, him. And Carl is actually near mint, graded 9.6, which is really impressive.
Very impressive. A 9.8 is the highest you can go in the slab market. A 10 is an albatross.
That's why I gave you a 9.6. There's that one time you fell in the third grade and you got a little ding.
I'm surprised you haven't accounted for all my conditions and bumps and bruises all throughout life.
But Carl's going to talk to us today about comics and comic grading, and I am excited.
Yeah, comic books specifically, broad termly, have been a long time trend in collector's trade as early as the 1800s in the pre-dawn era. The pre-golden age era. That's the joke that it's pre-golden dawn. Anyway, but with like newspaper strips of Hogan's Alley from Richard F. Orcutt's. And then you have entered into the golden age from 1938 to 1956, where you have pulps, newspapers. But at the same time, this was a wild west of publication because
golden age stuff. It's hard to find that in good condition, too, because the pulps were just a step above toilet paper, what those things were printed on, too.
Oh, yeah.
And they were not taken as seriously as literature either.
If you have not maintained the original pulps well, they will feather, they will expand, they will reach forms that most books are not meant to reach at this age.
Yeah. So for context, listeners, if you haven't heard it in a previous episode, I worked at and eventually managed a comic book store for like 7 years. Mm. Carl also is a comic shop warrior and also works with back issues. I was particularly one of the back issue people at the shop I worked at, not because I had a lot of background knowledge in the first place, but I think, and this is probably the same for Carl, the autism and the ADHD give you such a memory for this kind of stuff. Not what I had for breakfast, but for this kind of stuff, sure. Where the attention to detail and being able to look at that cover and say like, oh wait, this is a first appearance, but I don't remember which one. Let me go look. Oh wait, this one's important. I remember why. So Carl and I have that shared background, and vintage comics are fun.
Identifying key issues in comics can be pretty gnarly, and it could be tip point for a myriad of reasons. It could be from first appearances to the first illustrations of a certain artist, the rarity or scarcity of the book itself. If it was a low print run or just dozens got lost in the fire like Torchwood, but
yeah, and the rarity of the issue too, it means that like there's some comics that I've gotten to handle that you wouldn't think would be worth more than some of the others I've gotten to handle. So, like, I think one of the most expensive comic sales I was ever a part of was a first print of the first issue of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Ooh, wow.
Which, I don't remember the exact number, but it was only a few thousand that they printed.
That is
and
a
it was
fact.
Out of a garage. It was, like, out of a garage. Nobody took it seriously at first. It was, they didn't know it. What it was, they didn't know what they had.
Eastman and Laird are pioneers in the comic book era, and and to point out the scarcity of that, the first edition of that book, there were so many other reprintings of
other
it.
Printings.
You had the same book, but you didn't have the first.
You didn't have the first, so that sold for more than the Amazing Fantasy 15 that I got to handle, which is the first appearance of Spider-Man.
That is a good one.
The cover. yeah, the cover was ripped off and it was still like a $3,500 book. Mm-hmm.
It can be a low grade, but it's the
it's still the fact of what it is,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so the rarity of that stuff is wild.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of comic book experience. I never really got too into that, but I did work at a game store for several years that did a lot of like card buying and things like that. Didn't really handle graded cards much, but if you're familiar with Magic the Gathering, that was primarily what we worked with. And there's certain cards where it's just like, it doesn't really matter the condition so much as if the card is intact, it's
mostly
worth money.
Intact.
Mostly
yeah.
intact.
Yeah.
Is it a complete card and readable?
Exactly. Yeah. Can you put it in a card sleeve and not feel it differently from other cards? So you could put it in a deck is kind of the determining factor. But yeah, no, there's definitely like dual lands and things like that. The original cards that are, there's a thing called the reserved list in Magic the Gathering, or cards that they have promised they're never going to print again, but then they do. But until they print them again, they're worth a lot of money. So,
yeah. And then there's that war of first edition and second edition.
Oh, so that's interesting because there's actually, there's alpha and beta
oh,
cards
wow.
that are worth even more in some cases. And there's even alpha test cards, which are like, it's literally like the creator of the game drew this on a piece of like card stock, like a blank unprinted card, wrote down what he wanted to do with this card. Mm-hmm. Those are incredibly like niche and rare.
So yeah, collecting and grading is its own thing. Carl, why don't you tell us a little bit about grading?
Grading is a very niche and subjective art. Because you can have two graders. One person will grade it at a 7. Another will grade it at a 6.5. One may go a little lower, but that's okay. One may go a little higher, and that's also okay. So open grading, it's very subjective. But having a third party, like a company, to grade out, as long as they're sticking to their mission statement on how they grade their products, on how they grade your products, will vary, but having it done by an official source solidifies that grade and how they would sell it and offer that suggestion to how you would sell it.
And for anyone who, I was going to say, for anyone who's not in the comic world, just to explain grading. So grading a comic is basically mm-hmm. giving it a score from 1 to 10 on how good a condition it's in. And the condition it's in very much alters how much you might charge for the book. So there are professional grading companies, which I'm not going to jump the gun and name stuff because that's what Carl's talking to us about today.
There are a handful out there.
There are a handful of them that you can send your book to, and they go through a very meticulous process to try to assess it, something that is hugely subjective in the most objective way possible that they can with their system to tell you what quality condition your book is in, because there is a guide for selling comic books that has been around for ages called the Overstreet, and understanding the value from 1 to 10 can help you determine the market value of the comic book you might be wanting to sell.
Now, there are two forms of grading. There are letter form grading, and then there is 10-point grading. Letter form, that is the near mint, very fine, very good to good plus grading, and those calculate the roundabout of the 10-point grading, mm-hmm. like 10 through 9.2 is your near mint plus, your gem mint, and your near mint minus. At a 9-point, you start getting into very fine to near mint. It's where that line mm-hmm. starts to broaden. Then you start getting more dings, more creases, more age, acidity, maybe. It's a little darkening on the inside of the paper and the page. And then basically it chomps all the way down. It's been described, take a pyramid. You start at the tip top at 10, that perfect 10 that can hardly ever be reached. And then you just go down the pyramid all the way to the bottom, which is a fire pit where the books go and that are completely unsellable.
Yeah, and for context, listeners, when we're shipped books at a comic book store, brand new books off the press, yeah. those are not near mint when they get to us for the most part. No, they've been in the shipping process. They've been handled.
They've been jostled.
Yeah. So to get a near mint, it would have to be someone saying fresh off the press, okay, let me use my very special gloves to put this in something and send it immediately to go be slabbed.
Even then, you run into publication errors.
Yep.
And that involves the staple. Was it cut straight? I have a copy of the Superman and Stephen Colbert. It was perfect, near perfect. I would have had it if it hadn't had a little slant on the cover where it had been cut.
And
so
even how it was printed, like, it wasn't something I was going to get graded, but I collect the hardcover editions of Saga, and we received a whole batch where it just printed everything too dark. Everything was too dark, and the whole batch we got printed, I could barely tell what was happening in the scenes and only see the speech bubbles because it's a printing error, and those happen on a smaller scale all the time.
Yeah, and in the card world, that happens too. We actually, there was one time where we got like a whole bunch of cards to sell that were like, they're supposed to be like extremely, extremely rare. There's only like 1,000 total printed, and each one is numbered. And we had gotten some where they were so off center, you could see part of the next card. Like, the card was so miscut, you could see part of the next card, which in a way made them even more rare. But that stuff can be really wild sometimes.
Which there's a weirdly kind of a market for some of that stuff in comics too. So I used to have someone who would come collect double covers. Because sometimes they would accidentally put two covers on a comic book.
Oh, right.
And I had a guy who, if I got one that was printed with two front covers in it, I would be like, hey, man, what's up? We got another one in. Do you have one of these? Do you care about this?
Cool.
And that's just the niche thing he liked to collect.
There's one on my search list whenever it pops up, if it ever pops up, because it is limited supply, because it was a recalled print. It was Super Action Comics 100... No, I'm sorry, 869. It's when you see Clark and Pa Kent punched over a wood fence, and Clark is holding a beer bottle.
Oh.
And it says local brewery, or beer, it just said, just a face label. Later, that was recalled, and they replaced it with just soda pop.
Of course.
So that's what's out in circulation today. But to find the ones that say that have the misprint beer on it, that's going to be worth a bit.
Oh, actually, I had a question about grading.
Oh, yeah. So what's up?
I know sometimes there's a thing in the card world, particularly I noticed with Pokemon, where people would take cards that aren't worth a whole lot, but they would get them graded and slabbed regardless to try and increase their value. Is that a thing in comics?
It is a thing in comics. Some people will slab
anything.
It for anything. It's throwing darts in the wind. Well, it's when it comes to when people go to slab their items and have it preserved into that numerical sense, because everything that actually, let's dive right into slabbing. That's the perfect time for this. So slabbing first began in 1984 when the ASA was introduced and they brought in letter grading, and a plastic holder that was held up by Alan Hagar as displayed as the first slab card for preservation and authenticity of grade. And then coins followed suit by the PCGS in 1986. 1981, Professional Sports Authenticator was founded and begun using the 10-point grading scale. And from 1991 to 1988, the PSA had graded near 1 million cards, weeding out the wave of counterfeit cards and standardizing grading across the industry, leading us to comic books being slabbed in 2000 by the Certified Guarantee Company, or better known as CGC, who displays all of their comic book information with... Let me actually grab the loan slab I had with me, because I purchased this as an example, and we'll get there. I can show Violet and Brienne, but I will show everyone else as we go.
So, listeners, a slab comic is essentially enshrined forever in this plastic casing that helps you guarantee that the condition that they graded it as is the condition it's staying in. You can't open the book anymore. You can't do Yeah, it'll forever be the 8.5 that Carl has there. So the comic is encased, and there's a little lip at the top that has the grade number it receives. They're color-coded, interestingly.
They can. They can come in different colors, depending on the grade.
Depending on the grade, and they have the requisite grading information on the back, which Carl's going to show us.
But it comes with a serial number and a census and all the detailed information. Like, it even has a code for the off-white pages. I'm not quite sure what that is offhand, but I know people who do.
Yeah.
Cool.
And they like...
Yes, if it... Go ahead.
It gives you all of the information to know why it got graded that way. It lets you know who did it. It is basically saying, hey, you can't crack this book open, but someone professional did, and here's what they found.
You cannot read it. You can do nothing else but adore it in its glassed jewel case to be overpriced by folks on eBay for hundreds and hundreds of dollars. Because the process that it costs to go into grading, I'm not too certain of, but I do know it costs a processing fee by the CGC. And as it's evaluated by the professionals and glass jewel cased, it's and everything is solidified, there's just no arguing it. It's everything, all you need is there. It's just, yes, it is a $600 book if you buy it from me.
And depending on the backlog that CGC has, you could be waiting. You send your comic off, and it could be like 6 months later you get your book back, depending on the backlog that they have.
Yeah, same with cards.
Actually, I can explain an example why slabbing this book in particular was a bad idea. As an investment type.
Yeah.
Okay. The book in the jewel case of the slab is Grant Morrison's The Filth Number 5. Now, the Filth Number 5, single issue, the value of the book alone to date by the Overstreet Market Guide at a 5.8, the value is $2.55. Gotcha. And forever, it will be at a 5.8 and at a $2.55. What did I pay for it? I paid $15 plus $15 shipping, equating to a full $30 investment to tell all of you lovely folk about.
And and some people, like, went, because on Sundays, it would be the day that people could come in and sell their collections at the place I worked. So I would find these people who got these books they were convinced were going to be worth something. Mm-hmm. And in comics, speculating is a curse on the medium. it is a hex, a curse. I hate it. And people would spend this money to get something slabbed, and it very often, like, people would buy books they didn't even like to get them slabbed, thinking they'd be worth something. And, like, in the 2010s, when a lot of these comics were getting pilots for Netflix shows and getting picked up for other things, there are some comics where it was like people seem to only be writing the first arc of something so that it might get picked up for a movie. And the speculators were like, oh, I can tell. I'm going to buy 10 copies of it and get them all slabbed. Whoops, NBC didn't care to take that. It got optioned, but never happened. Now I've spent a couple $100s getting these 5 first issues slabbed and shipped back to me. Yeah. And they are not worth the paper they're printed on anymore.
Every now and then in my company's notes, I'll come across something that's been optioned by NBC or Amazon, and it's like, this note was created in 2017. Here's a clear sign it didn't move forward. Probably not going to happen.
No.
Yeah. And in the card world, it can be really funny because a big determining factor, at least for Magic the Gathering, on whether or not people will speculate that a card will be worth a lot of money is... each card is given an individual rarity, first off. So if it's a mythic rare, it's assumed to be more right off the bat. But also what the card actually does is the biggest determining factor. So speculators oftentimes are like actual Magic judges that know the game so well. And then ironically, with Pokemon, it's a little bit of the mechanic, like what the card does. But with Pokemon, it almost seems like it's more what Pokemon is it? If
that
it's Pikachu,
sense.
If it's Mimikyu, if it's Gengar, if it's one of the like most popular Pokemon, somebody's going to slab a bunch of them just to be safe. Imagine, if you will, a world where people are trying to speculate on these things, but the only way you can really get them is by buying booster packs of comic books.
Yeah.
And then maybe getting a copy. I mean, it's wild.
And comics have something kind of similar with rarity with modern comics and variant covers.
True.
So
variant covers is
a whole, it's its whole
It is a showcase thing. Of talent is what it is. It is because there are so many different illustrations and so many artists can showcase their work and show their appreciation to the characters freely.
Yeah, a lot of speculators go after those. And some of those would be like one per shop.
Wow. Some places, yes. Ratios, they're called.
They have one in 5s, one in 10s, one in 20s, one in 25s.
Depending on the series, they may get quirky with the numbers, or there may be a standard to it.
So like
Alex Ross has his solo virgins.
Yep.
The sketches are in 100s, and those most shops will charge 50 to 100 for just because it's a working piece of Alex Ross.
Yeah, wow, so like one of the comics that I have the whole series and all of the variants collected of is Sex Criminals. They had a secret not safe for work variants. Some companies will, and I really like how some companies do it where it's like, yeah, we have variant covers. Order as many as you'd like. But speculators aren't as keen on those because there's not the rarity of you had to order 5 regular covers for every one of these.
Gotcha.
But those get slabbed too, and they have their own collector base too.
Just as much pull and value market as the A covers. Yes.
But I got a lot of not safe for work ones that make me very happy that I haven't gotten slabbed, but they're funny, and that's the purpose.
Different kinds of, other than variants, something that was used in publications. Used in publications at a very early age, back in the Golden Age, were ash cans.
Oh, yeah.
Ash cans.
Yeah. It was originally just nothing but one page, one single page. It was just to be like a promotional piece. It'd be like just the cover itself. Huh. And from there, it became like fodder, like most prints. So nobody really collected them. They just kind of became kindling, and which eventually called them ash cans because most folks just threw them out.
Yeah, I was about to say, what is an ash can exactly? It's like literally just a one-page
print. It is a promo piece. Well, it's expanded since then. So like if you go to a retailer convention now, some people with indie books will offer you ash can editions of their book, which are smaller, just to be like, hey, here's a little snippet of the thing I'm working on, a little promo snippet for you to look at. And it might be almost like a zine, too, sometimes, that they collected as, so you can take a look. So part of my...
In the 90s, that became where ash cans were, we know.
Yeah, yes. As we know them now. So part of my homework when I was managing would be when my boss would come back from some retailer convention, would have a bunch of ash can and like reader copies of things. And part of my homework would be to read them and see what we should stock.
That's good homework.
Sometimes it was good. Yeah, sometimes it was good. Sometimes it was slim pickings and I was like, don't care for that. But yeah, but there's a market for people who collect the ash cans.
Yeah, the purpose of the original ash cans editions was to fool the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office into believing the book had already been published. Like, it's already out there.
Really?
Clerks at the office would accept the hastily produced material as legitimate, granting the submitting publisher and trademark to the title and getting things moving. Since the ash can had no other use, that's what led it to being a throwaway piece. It was a divisive tool to bring out more publications that didn't exist.
Yeah, and eventually in the 90s, it became a promotional thing.
It's still today, it is. I've actually got a little bit of the recent run of Batman that came out with the new Jim Lee and the second Hush story. Just Bat's sitting in his chair. It is like a little sketch. I'll point the camera to here. Yes, I tore the page out. But soon I'll be going over it with a coloring pen. And
fun.
That's fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
'Cause it wasn't until recently, and I don't know why it didn't hit me. Hey, if you get a black and white book, it's a coloring.
It's for coloring. It's a coloring book.
Yeah, it's totally dual for that.
Heck yeah.
You have free will. I was going to say, you have free will. You can color it.
So I have kind of a more general comic book question, right? When it comes to all of these, like Batman is a great example. I have for a long time wanted to get into comics, but what I've always struggled with was where do I start? Because I know I like She-Hulk and like I like X-Men. I know. Okay, I think I've stumbled upon a very big question here.
This question has come across every now and then, once and twice a generation of someone who's curious about diving into a series. Yeah,
once or twice a day when you work at a comic book store, you are asked where to start. But continue, yes.
So yeah, from the outsider perspective that I currently have, I have a handful of comics that I have gotten alongside Brienne and visiting the comic book shop that she used to work at. And like, I have some She-Hulk and stuff that I still need to read, actually. But that was a new series, that She-Hulk, that I got into, right? And I don't think there was She-Hulk before, obviously, but like there wasn't anything recent.
Which we have collected editions of.
Yeah. So
where to start?
Yeah, because from the outside perspective, it seems kind of monolithic, right? Because like, there's been hundreds of Batman series, probably.
Thousands.
Right?
Yes.
Thousands.
Yes.
Same with like Spider-Man and X-Men and everything. Like, where do you start with that? With those series?
As I've traversed the data of titles and their issues and everything that connects them, start with graphic novels. They at least have complete stories as to where to start. I mean, monthly, there's at least 6 different series of Batman, 8 different series of Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. So if you hit with the graphic novels and start with a series there, you can't go wrong. Just pick what you like. That's
picking what you like is the number one thing. And I would get the question a lot, like, how can I get a comic that'll be worth something someday? And I was like, well, buy the ones you like so that even if the monetary value doesn't go up, it's still worth something because you like it. But as far as starting comics, I think it is. So quick detour. I got into wrestling a bunch this year, and my friend who got me into wrestling works at a comic shop in Washington, D.C. And the way she described it was, it's kind of like comics. You jump in close to the beginning of something. So like for me, I jumped in at a WrestleMania because that was a big event. Look up what you need to for context you might be missing and just enjoy the ride. So comics like to start over with number ones a lot. It especially became prevalent in the 2000s because number ones sell a bunch.
Sure.
Number one sell a bunch. So number
zeros.
Yeah. Number zeros
seemed,
was
like,
a
hardcore.
Yeah,
whoa.
That was a hardcore
like,
thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But the big two, DC and Marvel, they have a habit of starting over with number ones because people buy a lot of number ones. Alternatively, like Carl said, with graphic novels, I don't know if people outside of comics really realize this, but a lot of the times, so like the collected editions I have that are numbered like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on our bookshelves, each of those contains like 4 to 8, depending on the story arc, single issues of comics. Because comics are a periodical, they don't stay orderable forever. They're not printing it forever. They're printing a certain amount, and when they're done. So the graphic novel versions, or what they are called trade paperbacks, those start in order, and it is a way for them to keep those in production with something that it's a book.
Gotcha.
So
and a lot of these
follow-up questions about that.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Okay.
That sounds like a good place to start for sure. However, what if the situation that I encountered at one point was I wanted to start with X-Men, and this was before we had even met. So I wanted to start with X-Men, and I went into the local comic book shop and I was like, hey, I want to start reading X-Men. Where do I start? And they're like, well, at the time there wasn't any like, I don't think there was any trade paperback for the current run, but there was like, it was on issue like 34 or something like that. So there's
there would have been a few. They might not have had it in stock, but essentially the 6 issues come out. And then when you're ordering like 7, 8, 9, and 10 for the next month, they probably have the volume 1 through 6 trade paperback is maybe orderable then, or maybe the next time. So it's just a thing where every 6 issues or so, then you have the option to order the trade paperback that contains those.
Gotcha.
The real question is really, how far back do you want to go with X-Men? It's kind of like starting Star Trek, which it's all Star Trek, right? But there might be a Star Trek series that speaks to you more. So like, if I was recommending X-Men to you, I would recommend you start with Astonishing X-Men, actually.
Okay.
Because I, as much as I hate the guy, it's by Joss Whedon. I already know you like Buffy, and it is closer to the actual, like, early aughts movies you've probably seen.
Okay, cool.
And then, if you liked that, I would say, let's go back and take you back to the beginning of the Chris Claremont run, because that's where a lot of iconic X-Men lore starts.
Okay. So, second question. Do people slab trade paperbacks?
You can.
You can.
Depending. They're not. They're
should
a little
they?
Thicker.
Should
no.
they?
No.
That, I have asked that question.
Yeah.
But some folks do. But comics are collectible items, and graphic novels are tradable items.
True.
They're
yeah.
more for reading trade than
because,
collecting.
Because there is not because they're not a periodical,
right?
Right? Because
that
they're not
sense.
A limited
yeah.
run. The incentive to slab them for their value is less because, like,
it is a book.
We downstairs have volumes that contain original Sensation comics that had Wonder Woman in it, right? We have those earliest Wonder Woman down there from volumes that came out in, like, 2015.
Gotcha.
So those are going to be worth far less.
Yeah. So it's literally, it would almost be like if they, it's like when they do reprints in Magic of, like,
yeah.
They include this card in a later set that's a core set, so it's going to be constantly available for the life of that entire set until they stop printing that set. So,
oh yeah, trading back to comic
gotcha.
Books, looking through the sea of data and in titles, some of the things I come across is I see where series have actually ended, mm-hmm. and then just recontinued with a legacy number. Dark
yeah.
Detective Comics.
Oh.
It ran solely and wholly from 1940 up until 2009 or so. And then its second series yeah. came out 2015 till about, I could be a little dated, but anyway, Bat Detective
was,
Comics is
yeah,
currently on
the
its
right
third
name.
Run.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think
yeah.
that's in the neighborhood.
Yeah,
the
yeah,
new
but
52.
I started to haze and like, that's
yeah.
not quite right, but it's close enough.
When you say legacy number, what do you mean by that?
So
it means the numbers keep
the
going from the original.
Oh, so they're like counting mm-hmm. up from the very first Detective
from
yeah.
the very
so
from it, Detective, very first Detective Comics they're
wow.
counting up from.
Mm-hmm.
So for
Detective,
a while.
Action Comics.
So a while, they diverted because seeing 700 and 800 on a book is very intimidating and people don't
yeah.
want to pick that
yeah.
up. So for a while they diverted and they're like, it's the new 52 Detective Comics number one. And DC had their whole thing where it's like 52 titles all starting at number one, a new universe for you to check out, blah blah blah.
Got it.
Started over back at one, and then people were like, I'm tired of this, grandpa. so they went back to legacy numbering.
Bad.
Yeah, they
it's
went back
like
to legacy numbering.
Grandma used to bake.
Yeah, they went back to legacy numbering. So this was shortly before I left the comic book store. They went back to legacy numbering. So I went from ordering
gotcha.
Like Detective Comics 83 to Detective Comics like 600 something. I was like, all right, damn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Amazing Spider-Man just started their seventh series.
Are they using legacy numbering?
Not always.
Not always. Oh, gosh.
Not always.
Not always.
With the big two, with Marvel and DC, mm-hmm. think, yes, the stories are there, but the backbone is capitalism. And if they've noticed a trend in how people tend to buy certain issues or what they care about, they're going to lean into the trend.
Yeah. Because from my perspective, like, if I saw something was at, like, issue 700, I'd be like, gotcha. So there's 699 issues of Context that I do not have. And
but
it sounds
within,
like that's not necessarily the case.
They'll change.
Within
they'll
Detective Comics
yeah.
alone, there are a number of key issues just by the stories alone. Jim Lee's Hush. There's others. Scott Snyder has a one that's near the tail end
mm-hmm.
of that the first
gotcha.
Run. But though, just by example, there's still money in them. You
yeah.
just gotta find them.
So gotcha. another route to go on if you're trying to decide where to start in a comic book is look where a creative team takes over. That usually
mm-hmm.
means that's the start of a new storyline because a new creative team has hopped on board.
No,
and
okay.
when they hop off, that usually means they've completed their intended story. They might not have gotten to in time, but like my old subscription list was not so much give me these titles, but hey, if there's a new series starting or series continuing and this creator jumps on, sign me the fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah. Okay.
Typically the case. And once you find your favorites, either the artist, the writer, or whoever's on the team, lean into that and... Everything will, like, all your other interests will take over.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you for indulging my newbie questions there.
Yeah. So yay. Like any other, that'd like help. Any other prose book, there are certain authors people know they like with prose, certain artists and writers you'll figure out you like with comics. And I have read about superheroes I didn't think I would care about because a creative team that I enjoy started working on it. Gotcha. And I get to step out of my comfort zone a little.
And then you'll come across a title. It may be nothing special on the outside, but once you pick it up, hold it in your hand, give it a go, you never know the romances you'll make.
Yeah, like for me, the series Sex Criminals was like life-changing comic book material for me.
I actually just had the Just Image on my hand earlier.
Yeah. It was a life-changing comic for me. The art on the outside is very unsuspecting. It's cool. It's very graphic. Not like graphic sexually, but like just big silhouette. Yeah, big on silhouettes and stuff. But yeah, just starting, and like if Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky work on something, I'm probably on board.
Sounds good. Hell yeah. We should check out our local Minneapolis comic shop. I don't think we've been yet.
We haven't yet. I want to very badly.
Ooh. Noted. Let's gotta do that go. Soon.
But yeah, grading. Grading single issues is not something I have done. It's something that generally is mostly, I would say mostly people collecting the big two or collecting things from certain creators who have a big following or are very like well-known.
From there, some folks, they'll do Kickstarters to start up their brands. There's been a couple of Kickstarter materials I've seen come across and that have gone into production, it seems, because we tend to be buying their books.
Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Some folks out there will try to profiteer on slabbing. And there's one company out there called Comics Skin, and they make soft slabs.
What?
It's a thinly plastic clamshell that you, the collector, can slab yourself.
Oh.
Write your own grade.
I think it's a 10.
I mean, it's the thing is, it's going to be graded fairly if you send it in for grading. I've heard a horror story of someone sending in their soft slab to be sold, and they're looking at it like, well, if you open it and grade it, it's still a 6.
Wow. And, a soft like, slab even, seems like so, like, mm-hmm. that doesn't seem like a real thing.
That doesn't, it is. It is. I will link you all, comicskin.com, slab it yourself. Another company out there in the collector entertainment world is Dynamic Forces.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard of them equally. Yeah. The label they use on their books, on their editions, it's a yellow to gold circle, has a banner, what would you call that, silver? Yeah, it's like a bluish silver tone with two red letters of the DF on the center piece. And most of these will come with a certificate of authenticity to showcase it is either a confirmed signature by whoever is addition to it, if so. The scarcity limit of numbers, like this one, says it is a limited copy series of 15,000 copies made. If it did not have either or any of these qualities, congratulations, the certificate now proves it's a book.
Yeah. And
that brings up a book.
That's another interesting thing too. When you get into signed copies to get slabbed, there are some conventions where they're like, "Hey, there's going to be a rep there to confirm that these are authentic signatures you're getting."
Yeah,
because how else do they really know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you take a picture of yourself with the artist getting the signature?
Yeah. Does
that... Yeah. You know, it's so interesting. Like the weird parallels and then like divergences in the whole card side of things, because in the Magic the Gathering world, generally signed cards are like ultra niche. They're not even generally worth a whole lot unless it's a particularly popular card signed by a particularly notable artist. And even then, oftentimes they're not considered legally playable. So that drops the value because it's essentially a marked card.
And for comics at some conventions, they're like, hey, CGC is going to be there. If you get stuff signed by this person, we'll have a rep there. You can, at the convention, pull your card out sometimes, depending on how well it's set up. Not your card, your comic out. Get it signed. Step over to another booth and send it to CGC right there to go get slabbed.
Wow.
Now, the thing about the Dynamic Force is when you buy these direct from them, it'll actually be sealed completely. And it'll have like a silver holochrome
tamper seal. Yeah,
tamper seal. Thank you. Across where the comic would be sealed and taped in a somewhat preserved state. When you get this graded by a company, they have to remove that seal to grade the book efficiently. Yeah. So I have seen a trophy wall of just holochrome
stickers,
purely
out
of stickers that have been pulled off by graders.
Oh my gosh. And wow. Grading, that's so unfortunate.
And grading comics, I was talking to Carl about this the other day. I think the autism helps because like grading stuff when you live in Texas, one of the things that would get me really excited was when someone's like, I moved here from Delaware and these were in my mom's attic. And I would be like, that hasn't been in an attic in Texas for 40 years? Let me look at it. Let me look at it. Let me look at it. Let me look at it.
There's because no heat damage?
There's cards no... So some of these books, I was afraid that if I took them out of the sleeve, they were going to disintegrate. Because of how keeping things in the heat in Texas, where I'd be like, no, you remove your own book. I don't want that bad juju on me if something crusts off.
So, the good news is the cover is so acidified that, water won't be
an issue.
Right? So with cards, it's so interesting. There's something kind of like parallel to that with cards. So holographic cards in some cases are worth less depending on where they were printed. Because if you have a card that's a holographic card, a holofoil, it's printed, it's flat when it's printed. There is, there is by the nature of the card, if it's foil, it's got metal in it. If you go to a place where it is warmer or more humid, or if you go to a place where it's more drier than where it was printed, it will curl in one of two different ways, depending on whether it was too humid compared to where it was printed, or it was too dry compared to where it was printed.
Now, I'm holding up a copy of Vampirella Zero. Back to the numbers. This was a came with a red foil title. It was graded a fine, but how do you grade through a poly bag? Well, the thing they noted that it was be a fine is there's this spine break right here where the book is now just in a permanent bend state. And that's fair.
Yeah.
Totally fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can grade within the bag, but you have to have full access to both sides. You cannot grade through like a you can grade through a poly bag.
So like
kind of.
So poly bag,
but not through a combo bag.
A poly bag is essentially them putting a wrapper around your comic.
Mm-hmm. Like for sale. Sleeve,
and
they
not
do
just
this
like,
to cover.
Not just like a card sleeve. It is from the publisher given to you in that bag.
Oh, wow. Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
That is
from,
most assuredly, it had never been used.
Never
one
been
would
opened.
Confuse it to be near. Yeah, one would confuse it to be mint because it hadn't been opened, but it has also been
so like all
in
of
the elements.
All of my Sex Criminals Not Safe for Work covers were polybagged because we couldn't just show them on the shelf at a store.
Mm-hmm. They had polybagged, like blacked out. From
blacked
the neck
out
down.
Like blacked out like old porn at a gas station in the '90s.
Mm-hmm. Good old days.
Good old days. You could pick up a nudie mag out of Texaco. but yeah, it's wild. And like grading stuff, it's weird the things you learn. So like sometimes I could tell if it was kept in a house where someone smoked because the part of the box where the tops of the comics were, they were all yellowed and I could kind of see where the lid had kind of protected them from some of the smoke. And there was just like a dividing line.
Wow.
If it's like made from newsprint or paperback, it will absorb that smell and it will puff you in your face.
Wow.
They're book mites are a thing. Some of the bags people keep them in. So the comic
I've
book
seen
bag.
Silverfish.
Oh, me too. Oh, me too. I had sometimes where I would hold the book sideways and be like, "Hey, man, so you wrote the address for that donut place you're going to go to on a piece of paper that you had on top of this. So you've indented the cover of it." Mm-hmm. Or, like I joked earlier, Marvel in the 70s had a Marvel stamp collection thing because they thought comics were useless. So there are some really key books that came out during those times that if I flip to the back, some child cut out a sticker, cut out a stamp of the Incredible Hulk that they had an album for Marvel made to get collect all of your stamps. So it'd be like, it would have been in really good condition. But when you were 8, you did this. It's still good.
Yeah, I can't imagine grading a whole comic book because just grading a single card is rigorous.
We'll demonstrate right now for you.
Yeah.
I will pick an issue. I will pick any issue that I haven't already brought out.
And I have,
Let me have
another question after this.
Go for it. Go ahead while I look for this book.
Did y'all ever encounter people who would try to repair or modify damage to their comic books to pass them off?
There is a whole industry behind it, too.
Oh, wow.
Yes, there are folks out there who will do their own restoration attempts and not know what they're doing because of the fragility of paper and what you do with it that will take permanent placement and affect its grade. You can tell when something's been pressed, especially the older it is.
Yeah, pressing is the big thing people have done or they try to do themselves. Sometimes when I've had books that I was like not worth a lot, but it got kind of fucked up from the humidity, I'm gonna sit this under my long boxes and do its thing. Not something that's worth a lot, just something I was like, oh, that got kind of fucked up when I left it out and I was reading.
Yeah, the big standout for me is so most modern Magic cards have a black border. Is Sharpie in the border where it's been scratched and you can see the pulp? It's so obvious. Ugh.
Oh, okay. Now for fast grading. This is my issue of The Defenders 116. All that's special about this issue to me is this was Mike Mignola's, the creator of Hellboy, his first coloring job for Marvel when he was working for them.
Oh, very cool.
Apparently, according to the biography he was in, it was the worst coloring job according to their editor, but I think that's just a corporate example of not letting the artist do what they want to do.
Let him play.
Anywho. But flashing is something you do when you just hold the book against the light. And this book, it's had a trip. Multiple little color breaks along the spine. 1, 2, 3, 4. It doesn't need to add it up. What you're looking for is the big picture of the grade. You're just looking for the grade entirely. You're not doing it so much by how many nicks and dings there are. Just by the severity of it. And the presence of the book itself, it just tried to fall out of my hands. Now, you see, it's not completely square. The back cover comes up just a bit on the rise. Let's see. So from there, otherwise, good paper quality. Some minor tear up here. A little bruising because of the slip-up. That's just from a misaligned spine of handling. Little mark here. Otherwise, clean cover. Does the inside of the cover reveal any further scratching? That is something to note, because sometimes the front won't show it, but the back will. So we have some minor scratches all along, a few color breaks along the spine. Actually, that is a spine break. One or two spine breaks. Okay. Now, the shop put this at a very good. That puts it about medium of the temple, and that's about a fair assessment. I'd put this about maybe a 5.5.
Interesting. So you don't look page by page or anything.
You look at quality. It's okay to have some people will put their name on the front cover.
There's so many times it's really cute though, because it's usually a little kid, and sometimes you'll find notes like, "Not Jeff's. This is Matt's book," and I'm like, "Yep." So there's sometimes, like with the stamps, you know to go into the book to go check for something that's damaged, right? Mm-hmm. But apart from that, you're getting a general idea of what general condition is this book in. So, that grade of Defenders, it was read and taken pretty pretty decent care of, but the elements and time have probably done their thing.
A lot of different handling, yeah. Different styles, probably different hands a long time. But yeah, that is essentially grading.
It's a really fun skill to have when you're in comics. I quite enjoy it. I like when I find a good first issue. Like, I'm not someone who collects things that are necessarily valuable enough to go get slabbed in most people's eyes, and partly because I want to be able to still look at them.
Yeah, I personally still want to read my books.
Yeah. So, like, for me, the oldest stuff I really collect are the Gold Key Star Trek comics. Mm. Most of, like, I have so many that I think are, I have some that are my place fillers, and this is something some collectors do. I have some that I'm like, this is probably like a 3.5, but I hadn't found this issue before, but if I find one in a better grade somewhere, I will replace it with the better copy. But like my Gold Key Star Trek number one, it's probably like a 6.5 or 7, and I'm thrilled about it.
Nice. I think the highest thing I have in my collection, just purely by coincidence, and did the research because, hey, I have that book. Let's see what it's worth, is Predator number one from 1998, when the first movie rolled out. And that's currently at the market somewhere in the $100 range if it was like at a 9.8. But it's likely going to be at a 7 or an 8 because of my handling over the years.
Yeah, because I...
But now it sits in a jewel case.
Yeah, so my most valuable ones, I don't have slabbed, but I do have the jewel cases that have a UV protection thing on them to have them.
Yes, those are handy.
Love them.
Actually, behind me...
Yeah.
Display tool. It's...
So, yeah.
Comic care cases. It's just
love
an open lid.
Love them.
Yeah. It has a space for your book. This is a copy of God is Dead, Book of Acts. Got a story with Alan Moore in it, I like.
Yeah.
Another nice fine foil job with an emerald Bible leather.
Love it. But yeah, no, that's my favorite way. It's just a case that with the employee discount I used to get wasn't too expensive. It has a thing so you can hang it on the wall. It's got some UV protection, but you'll also notice around our house, if it's a comic that is particularly one that I care about a lot, I will be anal about making sure it's not like in direct line of window or that kind of stuff to help protect it.
Okay. I have one more question just about the things you've seen while grading comics.
What you got, Violet?
Have you ever seen someone bring in a fake comic?
Once.
Kind of. I don't think they didn't realize they did.
Oh.
There was a thing in lots of newspapers where they would include in the Sunday edition a reprint or a very local print, hyper local print of something, to promote it. So there were times where in the Dallas Morning News Sunday edition, they're like, I have like a Spider-Man number one. Huh. I have a this special edition. Or they would do these, and I don't know how this person didn't notice, but there are modern dollar reprints of first issues of really key books where it's Marvel who did them, where it's like just a dollar for this first issue of blank. This first appearance of blank, just so you could have it to read it. It was just a dollar. It was small, right? And some people were like, I have the first Avengers. And I'm like, well, my darling, if you look on the inside page, it says printed in 2015. So.
Mm-hmm. You got a reprint.
Yep.
Gotcha. Yep.
In the 80s, there were a bunch that were, you could tell they were reprints just by the 80s ad on the back. Like Stridex was a big one.
The fucking Stridex, like, hey, nerd, you got acne, you're reading comics.
Something I want to do later on is there's the Dallas Cowboys.
Yes.
It's the Texas State Fair, the one
the
in there.
X-Men,
a lot
the
of
X-Men at the Texas State Fair.
Yes, what? Because a lot of the ads that are in there, I live right next to a lot of those landmarks.
Yeah.
Like Central Grand, right down the street on Main.
So it was like Spider-Man. X-Men at the Texas State Fair, I've seen so many of. There's also there's like some holiday one with Spider-Man in Dallas. But these all...
Oh, that was Dallas football with Spider-Man.
Dallas football
as well.
With Spider-Man. There was an Avengers one too. It was like Spider-Man,
yeah,
X-Men, Avengers.
Some JC, a couple where they were branded, afforded by, sponsored by JC.
The JC Penney, yeah. Like Christmas parade one. That's the one I'm imagining where you can see the cover, right? So those all came out in the Dallas Morning News in the Sunday paper.
Wow. And so people just thought, oh, I have the original. And they didn't know better.
No, those were a different thing. Those were a whole special edition thing.
That which brings up another topic: side comics, comics that come with other things, like with DVDs and other newspapers and magazines. Those are still collectibles and can be redeemed by most collectors if they deem it worthy. But they're there. They're out there.
Yeah. Well, the thing I say very often is comics are a mistake, and I love them.
Carl, what was the fake comic that you said someone brought in?
It was actually someone's independent print. It wasn't so much fake. It was very real, but it was like someone's fanfic that they had wrote up and I guess tried to sell it off to us.
Why is Spider-Man kissing Sonic the Hedgehog?
I don't know, but...
And why is Tails
look
pregnant?
Like, why is Scott Summers making out with Logan? Wait.
Hold on. You have my listen. It's not.
I'm intrigued.
Listen, I can't grade it for you, but it is worth something to me.
Wow,
in my heart.
That is wild that someone would do that. I wonder if maybe they forgot that they made it or something. I don't know. How could that even be?
They thought it was with the other rest of their collection. They had long forgot about it, and now it's landed in someone's drawer of items as passed through our buy trade department.
That's wild.
We've come across letters, breakup letters, all kinds.
I've come across nude pictures they wanted to hide inside of a comic thing, like nude Polaroids. That they're like, I'm gonna slip this in the back of this issue of I have a box full of 150 X-Men number ones with the Jim Lee covers, and I needed to hide some Polaroid nudes. Whoops. And it's like, whoa, I just saw that guy last week, and these are his balls. These are his balls in 1993.
That's crazy.
That's right up there with X-Force number one and the multi-trading cards of having to go through each issue to get each one.
Yeah, the early 90s, there was such a comic boom. There were all these gimmicks. X-Force number one had trading cards.
Oh, wow.
In them.
And each one had a different character.
Yep.
One was specifically of just a t-shirt to be sold.
So, so many gimmicks, so many things to consider, but... I love comics. I love old comics, and we should absolutely go check out the local stores here because I would like to.
Another recurring trend, last note, is a treasury size.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like Uber magazine.
Huge.
Those are making a comeback.
Think of like a Life magazine. Have you seen the old Life magazines, Violet, like...
Violet?
Yeah, yeah. Really big.
They do treasury editions. So
I have
one.
Never heard of these.
Ooh,
oh,
cool.
Wow.
This is more of a portfolio size, but it's about the same gist.
Wow, that's huge. I had never seen those before.
Yeah, I think they got a... this is the Work in Progress All-Star Superman portfolio.
Which,
it's just pure black and...
That is a good Superman story if you would like to read one of those, Violet. I would say that's one of my favorites.
Very good. I caught the animated version last week. It's okay. They dropped a few stories, but tit for tat.
Nice.
It's perfect.
Nice. Yeah, thank you so much, Carl. I don't get to talk about comics often anymore, and it's always nice to talk about them and get to dump about them.
Yeah, thanks for fielding my million questions.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love, ever since I've been re-immersed into comic books in general, it's just been a true joy, and it's been a great navigator for my neurodivergence and my late diagnosis.
Yeah. There are so many themes of that in comics all over the place. I think partly because the people making them are some flavor of neurodivergent themselves, usually, if you're going to commit that much to sequential storytelling.
Yes.
And yeah, it's working in comics right out of college. I was making more than I was going to make with my degree using one of my special interests. And it was a job that was more friendly to my autism because my job was to dump about this to people who had very specific questions. So my favorite part of my job was someone's like, I want to start with the X-Men. And I was like, okay, first of all, tell me what, and like, I had a whole system. Like, tell me what TV shows you enjoy.
I love doing that with magic too. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I would be like, tell me what TV shows you enjoy. And they tell me what they enjoy. I go, okay, let's start here. You're going to love this one. But yeah, it's such a small world. Carl found me because I was on a podcast talking about autism and ADHD. And it turns out Carl works at a store that would frequently work with the store I worked at. It's just a very small, small world. I love comics.
Super small. We all love comics. It is our linchpin as a society.
It is our modern mythology. It transcends religion.
True.
Transcends background.
A spoken language.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Rob Liefeld ones?
Even the Rob Liefeld ones. Even the Rob Liefeld ones. Feet are overrated. Hey friends, before I get to thanking our Patreon supporters, I would like to make everyone aware of a mutual aid opportunity. In our show details, you'll find a link to both the Chuff campaign and an Instagram page for Wadi. Wadi is a young Palestinian man living in a tent with his 7 family members, and Funds for Wadi aims to earn money for them to feed themselves. Because aid is not reaching the Gaza Strip, food is becoming increasingly more expensive day by day, and just for families to make it to the next day, it takes an incredible amount of funds to afford the basic necessities. The aid sites are dangerous, and Wadi was recently injured attempting to get aid at one of the very few aid sites there are. And Raffles for Wadi on Instagram holds regular raffles to help earn money for both him and his family. And you can use the link to the Chuff campaign to give to Wadi directly without participating in the raffle. So you can find links to both of those in the show details. And please share anything you can Wadi's way to help him and his family make it to tomorrow. And now I'd like to thank our Patreon supporters, like Lilith Rain, Janice Weston, Anarchista, Bethany Percy, Chamberlain Foreman, Nunya B, Kate Michigoose, Kate Genius, Chibs 1012, Dave Peril, Megan E, Carl Brooks, Natasha Neves, Gus, Lucy, Helen Clifford, B. Trossler, Sewing Sarah, Rachel Rachelson, Fintago, and Randy Lovings. You know the usual, if you want to help us out, the absolute best way you can do that is by getting other people to listen to the show. Post about it on Reddit, in a Discord group, in a Facebook group. If you're still rocking over there, I can't because every other post is Nana's freaking out over some AI picture of Jesus as a giant crab and saying amen. But wherever you are on the internet, if you want to share about info dumpies with people who might like it, that helps us out. We don't take paid ads and we don't pay for advertising. We grow entirely by word of mouth, and this is a really easy way you can support us without spending a dime. Now, I know in this economy, having an extra dime is not super common, but if you do and you would like to throw some our way, you can also find a link to our Patreon page in the show details. Mixed No More Patreon goes to helping us make anything. We're working on 2 new audio dramas, working on the Today's Lucky Winner spinoff, and an unnamed sci-fi spinoff. An unnamed sci-fi show, not a spinoff of anything. But yeah, the money goes towards helping us make new stuff. It gets split amongst our actors and my lovers, who are the other producers of the show. But yeah, it all gets split. We buy new equipment. We use it to make more stuff for you. So what we're saving on advertising, because you're helping us, goes directly to making these shows better and making more things. If you also want to help us out, but you do not have that extra time to spare, you can also subscribe on your podcatcher of choice. You can leave a rating and review. The more you can interact with our shows on your podcatcher of choice, the more it tells their respective algorithms that people are active and paying attention to the show, the more it gets recommended to people, the more activity on there looks good to new people who might be looking for something else to listen. It helps us in so many ways, and it is also something that is absolutely free. And if you want to come hang out with us, you can find a link to our Discord server in the show details. It's so much fun. Last week we had a craft night and it was just lovely, and We do body doubling. I'm going to be scheduling some more streams soon, including stream where Violet is playing the game The Dinosaur with Double D's, which that's a fucked up game. That's coming from me, and I'm excited for part two. But anyway, we have a lot of fun in the Discord server. Vibes are immaculate. I am so happy that the stuff we make attracts such lovely people. It makes me incredibly happy. But yeah, that's all I've got for you this time, my friends. Until next time, clever sign off.